Well, over the next couple of days, we want to take a look at hazing. And a warning, what we're going to hear will make Animal House look tame. This month, five Boston University students were found in an off-campus fraternity basement, their hands tied, covered in welts. Their frat, Alpha Epsilon Pi, was shut down by its national leaders. Four Cornell University Sigma Alpha Epsilon brothers face criminal charges in the death of a pledge last year. Cornell shut down the local chapter of SAE, and the school's president is ordering a revamping of pledging by next fall. Binghamton University in New York has banned fraternities and sororities on campus from accepting new members while that school investigates allegations of hazing. So what will Dartmouth do? 22-year-old Andrew Lose was a member of Dartmouth's SAE. In January, he blew the whistle on their hazing in a column in the school newspaper. He says school officials rebuffed him and students shunned him. Then just this past Friday, Dartmouth sentenced SAE to a 3-term probationary period. We're going to hear more about that in a minute. But Andrew, who took a medical leave to go through rehab, tells us that punishment is a slap on the wrist. And this isn't a position he ever wanted to be in. Let's welcome Andrew Lose. He joins us from New England Public Radio in Amherst, Massachusetts. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you.
We know Dartmouth was the inspiration for Animal House. It has a reputation for partying. Your grandfather and brother went there, so you knew that. You wanted a part of this.
Yeah, I was certainly aware of it. You know, but I remember visiting my brother at Dartmouth for the first time. He was a freshman. I was a junior in high school. And I still remember being kind of confused of walking into the fraternity for the first time and seeing this beautiful kind of mansion on the outside and walking in, and it's just this gutted, gross, you know, this is Dartmouth. I knew about the drinking and that reputation, but I thought maybe some guys sitting around a wood-paneled room drinking scotch and debating some kind of philosophical argument and not the kind of, you know, sad alcoholic landscape I found when I visited there.
Well, but still, as you said, you know, you did want it, this idea of the Dartmouth man, which your grandfather, who you idolized, had been. So when SAE came knocking on your door, and that's what happens, it's the middle of the night, you're ordered out of bed, and you are alerted that you're going to be a pledge. What happened? I mean, just it's kind of gruesome, but what are some of the things that you say you were asked to do?
Well, there was a lot of drinking involved, obviously. There's a real blackout culture at Dartmouth. There was one instance where we had all the pledges had to chug 2 cups of vinegar from a dirty mop bucket, actually. Mm. On one of the first nights of pledging, we swam in a pool of this foul mixture, which, you know, we weren't told what it was at the time. Later, brothers had said that there were certain bodily fluids in it. Some said there weren't. Not really sure what to believe until then, later, seeing this mixture prepared for the future pledges and seeing that there were, in fact, those bodily fluids in it.
Well, Dartmouth frat boys pride themselves on being able to drink 6 cups of beer in less than 30 seconds.
Yeah. You really get worn down constantly being asked to do these chores and tasks and all these gross things for the older brothers. And eventually it just wears down any kind of resolve that you have. And it's upsetting. You know, it can really be upsetting. And that's why I've tried to point out that this is not just a physical issue. It's an emotional and psychological issue. I mean, and it kind of is a form of bullying, but it's a highly organized form of bullying. I mean, it really devalues you. And then through that process, you tend to think that you're no good on your own. You're only good as a member of this group. And that's really dangerous thinking.
Tell us about some of the psychological things you were put through. There came a point where, I mean, you and the other pledges have done so much. People who have pledged are familiar with this. And you're, you know, and then there's a moment where you're completely broken down, where you're told you might not make it.
Well, you're told that you might not make it the whole time, and that's how the brothers get you to do all these things, you know, that you really wouldn't otherwise do. The night when they came to deliver the bids, this older brother who had tried to blackball me lit my bid card on fire, you know, this card they give you to signify that you've been accepted, and said that I had to do a quick six in the amount of time it took for the card to burn.
And that's six beers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long. I mean, the card burned rather quickly, and I couldn't drink the beers quickly enough. And then so he said, well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go home now. So, I mean, this whole idea of, well, you're not good enough, you have to do X, Y, and Z, I mean, this starts from the very beginning. But there's such a cognitive dissonance between, you know, we love you, we're your best friends. This is coming from the brothers. You know, we love you, we're your best friends, or we hate you, and you have to do all these things if you want to be one of us.
Well, there are other things. You say you were forced to eat omelets made of vomit. I mean, it goes on and on. Others have come forward, as you know, from SAE and said, it's not true. There wasn't really vomit in kiddie pools that you had to swim through. That was just, we just told pledges that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think they're going to do? Fraternity hazing at Dartmouth has gone on for such a long time. It's been an open secret, but no one has really literally come out and kind of enumerated what happened in their experience in their fraternity. You're kind of ashamed of what happened usually, and you just want to keep self-justifying, and that's how the system perpetuates itself.
Well, in fact, another Dartmouth alum, Snowden Wright, wrote an op-ed in the New York Daily News called In Defense of Hazing, and he talked about something called pulling the trigger, where pledges would force themselves to vomit in order to keep on drinking, and pledges weren't allowed to do it to themselves. Other pledges had to do it to each other. And he said, it was like watching two kittens licking each other, pure friendship. I know this is disgusting to some people, and I apologize, but we have to sort of get at this because he's saying that this is what happened. And before you wrote your column, you went to the school and told the school that, you know, there was a health crisis and something should be done about it. In an irony, because none of the other students would talk about what was going on, you ended up being potentially the only one who might have been charged with any of this. Now, all the charges have been dropped, but you, the whistleblower, might have been the one to actually get in trouble for hazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, not all the charges have been dropped. I mean, right now, the charges against the organization itself still stand. I'm happy that the charges against these individuals were dropped. I mean, I don't think that throwing 27 guys under the bus for this type of stuff is going to change it. I mean, what I've been trying to push for from the very beginning is a more broad-based reform. These hazing abuses happen at literally almost every fraternity at Dartmouth. I mean, my experience is pretty middle of the road. So we need to go after the organizations and push for a real structural systemic reform and not just try to pretend that this is some kind of thing that individuals do.
Well, the very well-known lawyer Harvey Silverglade is representing SAE. He tells Rolling Stone that your allegations are demonstrably untrue and said you were unstable. Let's talk a little bit about where you are in all of this, because you talk about the sense of entitlement of students at Dartmouth. And as you freely say, you had that sense too. I mean, you got very drunk at one point and threw a chair at a Dartmouth security guard. You did cocaine in the frat house. Another brother busted you. He called security. You were suspended from the school for a year. Are you just a disgruntled former pledge, which is what some are saying?
Well, I mean, let me just say the issue of whether hazing happens or not, the book is closed on that. It happens. I mean, this has been proven. And any kind of push in another direction is just a way to kind of shoot the messenger. And, you know, as to the argument about, well, you know, Los has sour grapes and, you know, he's just making stuff up for revenge. You know, I don't have any ill will against the fraternity or the brothers. I mean, I'm kind of moved beyond that. And that's evidenced by the fact that when those 27 individuals were charged, I wrote a long letter to the college expressing that I would not participate as a witness in this investigation that targeted individuals instead of going after the broader problem.
That's Andrew Lohse. He wrote a column about hazing in the Dartmouth School paper and was just featured in a Rolling Stone piece. We're going to hear more from him in a minute, but also get response from a Dartmouth dean. Meanwhile, what about your thoughts, students? Is this overblown? Or are you a parent of a student maybe at Dartmouth, horrified at what you just heard? Or are these traditions you support? Maybe generationally your family has gone through this. Let us know. HereAndNow.org. Back in 1 minute. Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation with Andrew Lohse about hazing. He says he blew the whistle on hazing at a chapter of SAE at Dartmouth and was shunned. And then just this past Friday, the school did punish the fraternity, as we'll hear. And Andrew, there's been a lot of response to your claims. Ariana Duggan, a Dartmouth alum who was in a sorority, doesn't dispute what you say, but she wrote in the Huffington Post that reform should come from students, not from school officials. And she also says no one forced you to pledge or stay in when you were hazed.
Yeah, you know, that's a real oversimplification. You know, there's such a great social pressure at Dartmouth to, especially for men, you know, to be members of fraternities, to have any kind of social relevance, you really have to be in a fraternity. This is kind of a real groupthink type of thing. It's a Stockholm syndrome when you're a pledge and you begin to associate with the people asking you to do awful things or doing awful things to you. But these are not things that people would do to each other, especially not, you know, bright, ambitious kids would do to each other on a one-on-one basis. Yet somehow, these collective organizations with a kind of elite mentality can permit these things to happen.
Well, you say they wouldn't do it as individuals, but maybe they then go on to do it in another group. Another SAE brother tells Rolling Stone that Wall Street recruiters used to come and watch some of the hazing. Dartmouth is known for sending its grads to Wall Street. And this brother says, therefore, the corporate milieu mirrors the fraternity culture.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. You know, that there's a corporate recruiting culture at Dartmouth which sweeps people away in the same way that the fraternity culture does. And it's the same kind of attitudes, you know, this attitude of, you know, the ends always justifying the means, you know, always protect the firm or, you know, always protect the fraternity, keep the secrets. I mean, this culture is a breeding ground for people who go on into the broader 1% culture, as, you know, we call it these days.
Well, Andrew Lohse, you made your appeal in a column in the school paper, and you made it directly to the school's president, Jim Yung Kim. He's since been appointed president of the World Bank, but he was very supportive of the fraternity culture. He said he had no control over it. The previous president at Dartmouth tried to do something about the fraternity culture and was completely attacked by on and off campus fraternity members. Do you think anything's going to happen?
I'm an optimist, but, you know, not much has changed. I mean, there are some task forces now. There are some committees. But, I mean, President Kim was quoted once saying that he thought the fraternities were good for the heart. You know, and that was his view as a physician. What if Dr. Kim had walked into the basement when the pledges were swimming in the kiddie pool of this gross mixture? I mean, I don't think he would have been saying then that fraternities were good for the heart.
Do you think someone has to die, which is what happened at Cornell, and now they're moving to shut down pledging?
That's a really hard issue for me. I think that might be the only thing that it will take. But even then, I get the feeling that even then, diehard fraternity, you know, guys and deep-pocketed donors who were affiliated with the fraternity system and have made it clear, and the Board of Trustees have made it clear that you just can't touch the Greek system. Even some of those people, I don't think, would be moved by someone dying. And it's not inconceivable. You know, with the way the forced drinking happens, it's just simply not inconceivable that a pledge will die at some point due to intoxication. I mean, it's going to happen eventually. And me saying, "I told you so," is not going to bring that person back.
Andrew Lohse, the subject of a new Rolling Stone article, Confessions of an Ivy League Frat Boy, Inside Dartmouth's Hazing Abuses. Andrew, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Well, as we mentioned, this past Friday, Andrew's old fraternity, SAE, was sentenced to a 3-term probationary period. No alcohol will be allowed at SAE parties at Dartmouth. The frat will have to come up with a policy to prevent hazing in the future and join in a campus-wide education program. Dean Charlotte Johnson of Dartmouth joins us. And Dean, your school's investigation admits that some of the things he claimed did happen. He says earlier complaints to officials fell on deaf ears.
That couldn't be further from accurate. His complaints did not fall on deaf ears. There's plenty of evidence that contradicts that. And the most significant evidence, I think, comes from our joint investigation with the Hanover Police Department in 2009 when Mr. Lohse initially raised these allegations.
There was a local police investigation, and they didn't find anything. But I guess the question is also, do you really believe that this is just SAE and that it's just SAE that needs to be addressed? As Andrew Lohse just said, he'd like to see the whole system addressed.
This is not about Mr. Lohse, nor is it exclusively about SAE. This is about what we're going to do as an institution to make sure that we end hazing on this campus. We are openly saying that hazing does occur on Dartmouth's campus, as it does across the country.
Even though it's illegal, we should point out, in the state.
Well, even it is illegal in the state, it is illegal in many other states. This is really about a few things. How do we reform? How do we prevent hazing from causing serious injury? How do we prevent a death? This has to be a situation where we tackle the issue as a community, faculty, students, the administration, and even alumni.
How much pressure do you get from alumni, from students on campus? We remember when a past president tried to do something about pledging, there were protests outside his home, huge banners were dropped, and we know alumni who are also donors put pressure on the school.
I've not encountered any alumni personally who come to me and say, "Look, I support hazing." The entire community is on the same page with respect to the fact that We have got to put an end, and we will not tolerate these sorts of behaviors because of the harm that they have the potential to cause.
And how do you do that? You know, who decides what is unhealthy? Blindfolding kids, maybe, and you know, you don't know that one of those kids may have some emotional problems and they get led off into the woods and left there. Or, you know, it's more obvious, you know, forcing somebody to drink so much alcohol that they throw up blood. That seems pretty obvious. But what's unhealthy pledging?
There may be gray areas with respect to what constitutes hazing and what doesn't. For instance, is a group of students required to wear beanie caps? Is that hazing? And what I've said to those sorts of questions is, right now our focus has to be on not who's wearing a beanie. We have to focus on that sort of activity which could lead to serious injuries, psychological harm, or death. Let's begin there. And I think where Dartmouth has taken a leadership role is in its willingness to confront the issues openly.
That's Charlotte Johnson, Dean of the College at Dartmouth. Dean Johnson, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Well, tomorrow we'll continue our look at hazing and look at how Cornell is pledging to reform it by next fall after a pledge there died. So how would you do that? Let us know. HereAndNow.org. Latest news is next. Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Harvard Art Museums, from Chinese jades to Jasper Johns, Byzantium to Bernini. Learn more at harvardartmuseums.org. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Figuring Color, exploring the expressive power of color in paintings and sculpture, ICABoston.org.